Jackson. Ever since the fire went out, I'm going to Jackson. I'm gonna mess around. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. Look out, Jackson Town.
Well, not going down to Jackson. Go ahead and wreck your hell. Go play your hand, you big talking man. Make a big fool of yourself. Yeah, go to Jackson.
An awful lot has been written about the Cash family, but no one has had quite the insight. My next guest, he's the only son of June Carter and Johnny Cash, and he has produced a tribute album to his mother, which features everyone from Sheryl Crow and Willie Nelson to Roseanne Cash, Elvis Costello, Ralph Stanley, and the two that we are listening to right now, Carlene Carter and Ronnie Dunn. He's also written a biography for Thomas Nelson Publishers, and both of them are called Anchored in Love. I'm delighted that they have brought John Carter Cash to my show today. Hello.
So glad to be here. This is a wonderful blessing.
And Johnny Cash is your name, and that has to be both a blessing and a burden.
Yeah, John Cash is my name. That's right. Yeah, I was born into a, you know, quite a musical family with a great stand of heritage, and it's been a real blessing actually in life, and my mother's music and all the people that she touched have still mean so much, I believe, to the world and to myself, and so this is sort of carrying on the message of her life, and then the CD is a celebration, and then the book is really a personal memoir, and my personal memories of her life.
We would call it an intimate portrait. Was it hard to write a biography of someone that you knew so well?
Yes. It was. I think. The research into the life before I was born was probably was more just straight research,
But still, I'm sure there were things that you discovered didn't know.
Yeah, definitely, quite a bit. But then after I came along, the book took on a different form. It became a I'd spend the whole chapter on a 4-hour period or a 1-week period to try to show how I remembered her and to try to explain her character somewhat, and then going through the grief again, going through the loss was intense, but was cathartic.
Well, there was an incredible loss in the fact that both your mother and father died within 4 months of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, of course it was more like the unit went, my mother and father were whole. And I think that after my mother passed, my dad just wanted to be with her,
What do you think was missing in other portrayals of your mother?
Well, of course, nothing is, she's never had a biography written about her before.
But she wrote a memoir, and then whenever they write about Johnny, they wrote about her.
Her autobiography, which she had two, were in-depth, stories about her life. I think, of course, for one thing, it's a personal memoir, this book is. It's her through my eyes. And so that's never been done before. And then also, there's a lot about her later life that I wrote about that had never been written about it. Of course, the subject of their passings, from someone who was in the room.
Yeah. She didn't spend much time in Among My Cleddements on her first two marriages.
Yeah,
right. Is that because divorce was considered scandalous at the time?
I just don't think it's
important to her.
Yeah, I just don't think it was important to her anymore. I think what mattered was where she was. I don't think she wanted to go through her first two marriages and point the finger at anybody or I think she had considerations and promises that she'd made that she wouldn't talk about those marriages very much. And so I think she was just following through with what she intended.
You write her favorite phrase was press on, also the title of one of her albums.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And it wasn't, and that was a life motto that she had. That
comes out of the Bible?
Well, I believe that I don't think those exact words come out of the Bible, but I believe that the spirit behind that statement does, that in the face of adversary, in the face of pain, in the face of struggle, that we just do not stop or we do not quit, whether it be as devastating as a loss of a loved one or or, you know, as simple as missing a song lyric that, you know, when performing, that we just, we grin and bear it, and we keep on shuffling the feet.
Did she see herself as growing up in a privileged situation? She grew up in front of a microphone as part of one of the first families of country music, the Carter family.
I don't think it was very privileged. I mean, they worked very hard. You know, lots of musicians do. But she grew up in a situation where she was put in front of the microphone at a very early age and said to entertain. And I mean, she spent all the time either in front of microphones or in automobiles driving from one place to the next. You know, I mean, and going to school and then, you know, when she was at home, feeding the horses and milking the cows. I mean, you know, I mean, she was a hardworking girl.
Well, she was really great performer, and yet she wasn't confident of her singing.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to do things to compensate.
Right, right. Well, she was never technically, you know, an outstanding vocalist. I think it was her character that came through so strong, you know, and her spirit. But you know, and that vivaciousness and uniqueness stood out. You know, she was a character. That's what it was about. It wasn't so much that she was an accomplished, you know, soprano or alto or whatever. She just was a great performer.
Well, she was an accomplished composer, and she's very talented on the auto harp.
Yeah, she wrote "Ring of Fire." You know, co-wrote it. Then my father recorded it. That was the biggest thing that she ever wrote. And then, yeah, she was a great musician. She was a wonderful auto harp player and guitar player. She played a little bit of everything. So. Yeah, she definitely did it, whatever it was.
And she was pretty good at acting.
Yeah. Yeah, she was, you know, she did a few things throughout her life, but I think her biggest role was that she was in The Apostle with Robert Duvall. Yeah, she played his mother, it was really a neat performance, yeah.
And Robert Duvall has provided the foreword to this book called Anchored in Love, an intimate portrait of June Carter Cash by my guest, John Carter Cash. The book is published by Thomas Nelson, and as I said earlier, there's also a CD with the same title. Were you always aware that your parents were very famous? Because you were born when their stardom was approaching its peak, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born right after a peak. But yeah, you know, I think I took it for granted, sort of, that, you know, everybody had parents that were like they were, and that that everybody got up on the stage and took a bow. But, you know, I mean, when I was 3 years old and I got up and I took a bow for an audience, after Boy Named Sue, my dad would, you know, the normal lyric was, if I ever had a boy named Bill, Frank, or George in there for years, he'd say, if I ever had a boy, well, I did have a boy, here he is, John Carter Cash. And I'd come out and take a bow. And so I was putting, you know, up on the in the limelight there at an early age. And, you know, I'm sure it did have a great influence on me. But just as the carpenter's son teaches him to do carpentry, and that's the most likely outcome is that he be a carpenter, then the same thing with me to be involved in music. And I found that in music production and also in the creativity, the outlets of writing, which I do a lot.
Well, on your mother's side of the family, you represent, I think, fourth generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, third, really.
Well, your mother comes out of a family, then her, okay.
Yeah, my grandmother was, it depends on how you look at a generation, but my grandmother was Maybelle Carter, who was groundbreaking in the basic rhythms and playing styles in country music, which have been imitated not only in country, but folk, and people like the Grateful Dead. Jerry Garcia listed Maybelle as one of his greatest influences.
You mentioned the possibility that Elvis Presley might have been a suitor to your mother.
Well,
did she ever say anything about that?
No, and I don't think that. I really don't know the extent of their relationship. I think that they were friends. I think they were close. I'd say there might have been a little something there, and I really didn't think there was for years. I just sort of thought it. You know, right, yeah, sure. But she worked with him on the road, and the more investigation into the book, the more I thought that it could have been possible. So I'm really not sure, but they spent a lot of time together, I know that. And but she was first and foremost, or all my life at least, Miss Johnny Cash. And she was all, that's about all she ever talked about.
When and how did she first meet Johnny?
Well, they met backstage at the Grand Ole Opry in the 1950s.
That long before they ever got married.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, the rumor is that my dad told her he would marry her when he met her, and I don't know. I've heard one thing or another for different people, but she actually didn't become a regular part of the Johnny Cash Show until 1961, and then they were married in 1968. So there were quite a few years there where he was going through a family breakup, and then she went through a second divorce also before they got together officially. So, but I'm really glad they did, because if they hadn't, I wouldn't be here. Yep.
You were the executive producer of the recent Oscar-winning film Walk the Line. Mm-hmm. And that point is well made in the film. They had a very extended courtship. Yeah. It was important to you to get those things right?
Yes. Walk the Line does one thing beautifully to me. It tells the story of their love affair. That was the intention of the film. I think into the process, as when I was working with the producers, it became very apparent that that's what we were going to say. So.
Well, it's apparent in the film that she was reluctant to become a regular member of the tour. And is that because Johnny was taking drugs?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if it was because he was taking drugs. He was just unpredictable. And she saw him at his wildest. But he gave her an offer she couldn't refuse, so to speak. He said, you know, come work with me, and if you can't make the shows, then I'll pay you. And, there were a few times where she would threaten to leave, or she would leave the tour, when he was showing out there, but for years she tended to him, but you know, then he fell in this great deep love with her, and I think he knew that the only way to be with her was for him to get straight. However,
there were relapses.
Well, yeah, of course, but however, that there, I think he got straight in the 1960s because he reached a level of interior pain that was just so horrendous that he couldn't do anything but get straight with or without her. The Walk the Line does sort of leave the viewer feeling it was happily ever after, but it wasn't so. The addiction continued for years to come, and you know, probably worsened in the early 1980s there for a while.
Your mother had some problems as well. This is a tough business. Mm-hmm. A lot of people either got involved with alcohol, drugs, mm-hmm. or the both.
Yeah, and my mother was surrounded by it for all those years, and then later in life she did have some addiction issues. So yeah, it's
was that a problem for your family as well? Your siblings growing up in that environment?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, my parents weren't violent people. They were tender and loving, and I say that that the worst were the verbal arguments that my parents had, but they weren't. It was more that when my father was using drugs or my mother was, they just weren't present in the same way that they were. They weren't the same people. So in later life, but you know, the thing is that through that pain, through the suffering and the addiction, they strengthened their steel. They had great healing. Their spirits got closer together, and when they passed, they were more in love than they ever had been. It was the most beautiful love I'd ever seen. So struggles of pain and addiction set aside, it was through the darkness that the light was found.
Well, she talking about that, she had seen Hank Williams, the man who mm-hmm. wrote I Saw the Light,
right.
Go through his serious problems with addiction.
Yeah.
So she must have understood that this was not all that unusual, unfortunately, within the field that they were in.
Yeah,
do you think it's
yeah.
changed today?
No, I think it's just as prevalent today as it was then. I think maybe in different societies and in different facets, in some ways it's more accepted. But I think it's just prevalent. I think it's just as devastating. I've seen it. I mean, it's still on our streets right now as much as it ever was, and in the music business and in on Wall Street. I mean, it's everywhere. So.
How did this tribute album come together? Did most of the people who participated know her personally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most everybody on the record was either a dear friend or her family or extended family.
And did they get to choose the song that they sang?
It varies in my productions. It has that this type of a record, either the artist would choose or I would lead them in direction. This record, actually, I suggested every song for the artist.
And you put together the duets,
because mm-hmm.
there were some duets here.
Yep. You know, I mean, and having Christofferson sing with Patti Loveless, that song is so tender. It's a matter of the choice. It's a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And that's what made that choice. So.
Well, it's obvious that these people really got into it. We opened with Carlene Carter and Ronnie Dunn singing Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And that was recorded in the Cash Cabin studio.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the records were done there?
I think all but two or three of the music tracks were recorded there.
So the spirit would be there as well.
Yeah, and Ralph Stanley's track was recorded at the Carter Family House in southwestern Virginia, near Bristol, where Maybelle and the original Carters actually did some rehearsal.
That must also have been very exciting for you to be able to record someone who is so much a part of the great tradition, Ralph
mm-hmm.
Stanley, and then some of the younger folks as well, and everybody in between.
Yeah, contemporaries, you know, and the choices were made out of who respected and who loved her and who knew her the most. Young artist Grete Lyle, she just has a great love and appreciation for my mother. Having Emmy Lou Harris sing a song to John, there are very few people could have done that song, you know. But it was a very tender love song between my parents.
John Carter Cash, who produced any number of his mother's later records, and now has produced a tribute album called Anchored in Love, also written an intimate portrait of his mother, June Carter Cash, called Anchored in Love, published by Thomas...
Thomas Nelson.
Thomas Nelson Publishers. Mm-hmm. Let's go out with one of the tracks, perhaps not the one that people would immediately assume we'd be playing, but a fabulous performance by Billy Joe Shaver.
Yeah, Billy Joe's a good friend. Actually, I just finished Billy Joe's record. I'll be a new Billy Joe Shaver CD out later this summer.
Produced by you.
Produced by me on Compadre Records.
Thank you so much, John Carter Cash.
Great to be here. Thank you, Leonard.
Lord, have mercy on me. Was the kneeling drunkard's plea. And as he knelt there on the ground, I know that God in heaven looked down. And I went down by an old country church. I saw the drunkard stagger and lurch, and as he reached his